My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick, and this is Sonatotum, episode 53. Hello, my friends. On this and every episode of Sonatotum, we talk about making stuff, finding success as we each define it for ourselves, and staying healthy and sane in the process. Today is another Parkcast. Today is Saturday, October 1st, 2022. I had to abandon the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media today because there's a very, very loud, obnoxious air show happening not two blocks away from the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media, shattering our eardrums and rattling the windows. As you can tell, I'm not a fan. So yeah, today is a Parkcast. Every episode, I like to start off by talking about my previous week in terms of my creative endeavors, things I've accomplished, things that did not go so well. And we've come to the end of September. If you've been listening to the last few episodes, you know that in September, my intention had been to spend just about 5 out of 7 days of every week writing on Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights, the fiction serial that I offer for free to my mailing list subscribers. You can find out more at mattselznick.com. Just click on the free fiction menu item. And the idea is that I would get 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks ahead of the weekly installment obligation for Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights, so that I would have a good buffer and I could focus October, in terms of writing, I could focus October on Shadow of the Outsider, the follow-up to my last novel, Light of the Outsider, and its companion novelette, The Perfumed Air at Kawanantag Bay. Also, if you've been listening to this podcast for the last 5 weeks or so, you know that September has been fucked. from my computer literally catching on fire and all of the wrenches in the works that introduced, to a whole slew of interpersonal issues that, in the interest of privacy for the people involved, I will gloss over. Let's just say that September was not a creative month. September was a lot of treading water and a lot of sleep deprivation and a lot of playing catch up and a lot of fucking computer issues and very little actual writing. I think I completed 3 installments of Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights in the month of September. We're up to installment number 78, I want to say, I just put out to the subscribers yesterday. Which, not only does that not put me ahead, I'm actually still kind of a week behind. Now, for a good portion of the subscribers, that doesn't matter, because when you subscribe to the free serial, you start at installment number 1. And so you've got 78 weeks before you catch up with where I'm at. There's only, I would say, maybe a quarter of the folks who are actually subscribed who are like twiddling their thumbs wondering why the installments have been so sporadic. Everybody else, by the time they get to installment 78, 79, 80, they're not going to realize that there was ever any issue. But I would very much like to get to the end of this particular story arc in Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights, the inaugural story arc, how it all got started. I would like to get to the end of that so that I can really clear my plate for what's next and still, you know, happily be able to offer, when all is said and done, probably a good 2 years worth of free fiction to people who subscribe to my mailing list. But I'm not there. And it's October now, and my plan has been that October I would focus on Shadow of the Outsider, and that is what I will do. I'm not sure how I'm going to break it down, because I still need to continue to write Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights, but I need to write this next novel. You know, it's kind of ridiculous how much time has passed since I started writing the first of what should be 6 novels in this series. I'll tell you how much time. It was, I believe it was the fall of 2017, possibly 2018. And so I'm struggling to not feel like I'm letting myself down. And honestly, that was going to be the topic of today's episode, feeling a bit of despair and feeling discouragement and dealing with those feelings and how they can sabotage and interfere with our creative process. Then, just yesterday, I got away from the office and I went to my favorite diner and I got a big lunch / breakfast and I started reading Natalie Goldberg's Long Quiet Highway, which I've been carrying around with me for a few weeks, finally cracked it open. Now, Natalie Goldberg is probably best known as the memoirist who brought the world Writing Down the Bones, a seminal work on not really writing craft, but living a writing life. It is certainly on the list of books I will always own. And when I found Long Quiet Highway, of course I had to snatch it up because I was not aware of it. And finally, as I mentioned, I started reading it at breakfast yesterday. And the beginning chapters focus a lot on her origin story as a young woman and the teachers who, though she didn't know it at the time, kind of set her on her course to become a writer. And because Natalie Goldberg is a very calming presence, her voice on the page is so gentle and understanding and accepting because, you know, she has had a life and she has had all of the feelings that many of us go through as young proto-creators, that feeling of being an outsider, that feeling of being a little bit removed from everyone else. Because she's such a calming presence, I shifted my thought about what I would like to talk to you all about today. Let's talk about the teachers. Now, I suppose this episode of Sonatotum could be considered a bit of an extension of last week's episode on gratitude, because it does come down once again to how grateful I am to teachers I have had, both literal in-school teachers and those mentors who have come to me through their written works. Let's talk about our teachers. And before I get into mine, I want to invite you, as I always do, I want to invite you to share with me who your formative, important, influential teachers have been in your own creative life, whether you're an author, whether you'd like to be an author, or whether you have some other sort of primary avenue for your creativity. Who are the teachers that you can point to, that you can remember? You can write me at matt@mattselznick.com. You can record a brief voice message on your phone and email that to me at matt@mattselznick.com. Or you can simply go to mattselznick.com, go to the podcasts section, and find the show notes for this episode, episode 53, and leave a comment there, right there on the site. However you choose to leave your feedback, to give me your thoughts about your influential teachers, I will respond. You know, if it's by email, I'll reply to your email. If it's a comment in the show notes, I will absolutely reply to your comment. If you leave me a voice message and send me that by email, I will play that voice message in a future show and we will have a little conversation in that way. matt@mattselznick.com or simply mattselznick.com. Go to podcasts, find episode 53, and leave me a comment there. Let's make this a conversation. You know that I'm always asking this if you listen to this show. Don't be bashful. It just takes a moment. And it's a way for you to acknowledge these teachers in your life. I'll start. I first think about my elementary school teachers, a handful. Mrs. Thomaser, who I believe I had for second grade and again for either fourth, fifth, or fifth, sixth, probably fourth, fifth. It was a split class. And I'm not sure if she did anything directly or specifically, but she was sweet. And she was definitely, as I recall, looking back through the lens of so many decades removed, of course, she understood that I was what we would now call introverted child, who was also far too self-assured in his intellect. That's a gentle way of saying that even at a young age, even as I was a skinny, bespeckled kid who was prone to being bullied, I had a sense of self-importance about me, a sense of superiority about me, because I recognized, quite simply, that I was smarter than most of the people I was around. It's not a good thing for a kid who can't back it up with anything other than his vocabulary and his book knowledge when he's rail thin and has a bowl haircut and big, thick glasses, right? So that didn't go well for me. But Mrs. Thomaser, you know, again, I had her twice, and I can only say that I remember feeling encouraged. You know, these days we would say I felt seen. And she must have found something special in me, because even when the family moved across the country, first to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and then to Southern California, she sent us Christmas cards, which I thought was lovely. And I hope I still have some of those, perhaps in the storage bin with the remains of my mother's belongings. Mrs. Thomaser, wherever you are, I'm sure you are no longer on this earth, but I think of you as the first person other than my own blood to truly encourage whatever it is in me that is driven to create. And then I think of Mr. Giles, who may have been my third grade teacher. I'm trying to do the math. He was a hard ass. He was he may have been ex-military, but he had a twinkle in his eye that I didn't quite recognize at the time. And he would meet my arrogance and push me. It was Mr. Giles who gave me a child in third grade or something like that, the one volume copy of the multi-volume Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, a one volume sort of condensed version. Gosh, you know what? Maybe this was a little bit later. Maybe he was fifth grade, because there's a Star Wars connection. I'm sorry if I'm getting the chronology wrong. So one of the ways that I would try to diffuse the bullying that I'm sure I brought on a little bit myself was by taking a lesson from the playbooks of Hawkeye Pierce from the television series MASH and from Peter Parker in his Spider-Man identity. And that is to wisecrack, to diffuse situations with humor, sarcasm, not usually at the expense of anyone else, although sometimes, because let's face it, I was a prepubescent kid. But I remember I must have been acting out, being sarcastic or being too clever for my own fucking good. And I remember Mr. Giles telling me, don't be a fool. And, you know, this was the 70s, late 70s, I suppose. And so I don't even know if a teacher teacher would probably get suspended for telling a child something like that today. But back then, you know, he was just trying to shut me down so he could get on with his instruction. But I said to him, I didn't miss a beat. I said to him, and this was basically a paraphrase from Star Wars, which had been paraphrasing other older sources. I didn't blink. I looked right at him and I said, "Who is more the fool or the man who teaches him?" Memory lies, but I remember him just kind of squinting and giving me just the hint of a smile and, you know, saying something like very funny or something like that, and or, you know, fuck around and find out or the equivalent. But he interacted with me in a way that acknowledged, again, that I had something more, that I had a need to express more. And I think he recognized that I wasn't too big for my britches. I was walking around in giant slacks and trying to fill them with bluff and bravado and bluster. Writing checks I couldn't cash, right? That's the saying. And again, I can't say that he specifically gave me something about art, about writing, to encourage me in those ways, but I felt encouraged. Speaking of Spider-Man, old Pete comes up a lot in my thoughts when I think about the origins of my creative life. Jerry Conway and Len Wein and Marv Wolfman, who were the three writers writing Spider-Man when I was most actively reading that comic. So the mid-70s into the mid-80s. I think they taught me how to write dialogue. I have, if anything in my writing is praised, it's often my ability to write dialogue. And I really do think I learned it from those guys, from the banter between Spider-Man and his villain of the day, between Peter Parker and his huge supporting cast of employers and coworkers and fellow students and romantic interests and friends and rivals. There was a rhythm. And Jerry Conway, Len Wein, Marv Wolfman, they taught me as much about writing as anybody, especially the rhythm of dialogue. Back to actual public school teachers. And this is one person who may actually be listening. Because we are in touch on social media and engage with each other on the regular. I don't know if she is a subscriber to this podcast or not, but Karen Wynn, if you are listening, thank you very much, lady. I had Karen as an instructor for the journalism class. I want to say my junior and senior year, and also for a photography class for one semester. And don't get me wrong, academically, I was a horrible, awful student. I just did not give a shit about getting good grades or even passing the courses. But I enjoyed that journalism class so much because, well, number one, we put out the school paper. And that enabled me to actually see my words in print, read by my peers, either for the first time or concurrently with, because I was in a creative writing class under a different instructor. I'm going to say maybe my sophomore and junior years. And we did a once a year, or maybe it was twice a year, literary magazine called Escape. And I helped select the pieces that appeared there. And I wrote a couple of things for it as well. But in Paw Prints, our little newspaper that Karen oversaw and mentored us kids in producing. I was writing record reviews and editorials. I was not interested in whatever was going on at the school. I was writing about the government's involvement in Central America. I was writing about the just beginning AIDS crisis. And I was even honored with an award. What was the Orange County High School Journalism Association, something like that. Anyway, a long piece that I had written about AIDS, which honestly took as its primary source a much more in-depth article from Rolling Stone around the same time. Yeah, I was awarded for that piece. But more importantly than any of that was I remember the environment that Karen created in that journalism class. It was pretty freewheeling, you know, because we kids were the ones putting the paper together. She was basically the editor-in-chief, I guess you might say, and she steered with a very gentle hand. And so long as we met our deadlines, but also I think because she was relatively young, I think we felt more of a kinship to her than we might have with other teachers. And also, let's face it, because we were all making something together, we were all involved in this collaborative effort. And she encouraged us to be collaborative and to follow our own stars in a way. So Karen, thank you very much. You absolutely make the list. One more teacher I'll mention from the same high school, Paul Pfluger. Those of you who've read my first novel, Brave Men Run, he gives the main character a homework assignment that leads to a kind of a pivotal point in the novel. It was a joy to have an opportunity to put a fictionalized version of Paul in that story. Paul Pfluger's class was contemporary world problems. It was basically read the newspaper the night before, talk about it the next day in class, you know? And he was pretty unabashedly a lefty. I don't think he made any efforts to hide that about himself. He may have attempted to present a balanced view in the class, but I think more than that, he attempted to have us think critically. And by now, you know, this was my senior year, and by now I was pretty, I mean, not visibly punk rock, I mean, not like with a mohawk or anything, but I definitely didn't give two shits. And I wasn't interested in, well, I was very self-absorbed, as children are. But, you know, my jeans had more holes in them than cloth. I was pretty physically fit, so I looked good. And even though I was still this thick, spectacled, long-haired misfit, I had enough life experience, I had discovered girls, that I had a little bit more confidence that I could actually back up. And yet, Paul would find ways to push back against that. I think he recognized that I was, you know, what are you rebelling against? What do you got? And I think he tried to focus that. Now, again, academically, I did terribly in his class. I was interested in the discussions that we would have in the course of the class. I could not be bothered to do any kind of homework or assignments. But I have Paul Pfluger to thank for an ability to think speculatively, I suppose I would say. That's saying see both sides, but not just see both sides, understand the motivations behind someone's view that might be in opposition to or alien to my own. Not necessarily to the point where I might find myself agreeing with them, but to where I could empathize which, of course, has served me in being able to write characters in fiction that aren't all just some sort of mirror or fragment of myself, you know? Let's talk a little bit more about writing and my teachers there. A very early episode of Sonatotum, I talked about my story family, in particular, my story father, Ray Bradbury, and my story mother, Ursula K. Le Guin. I'll refer to that episode in the show notes for this episode, episode 53, that you can find at mattselznick.com. The idea behind story father and story mother is that although, I mean, I met Ray Bradbury a few times, and we've had conversations, the very briefest of conversations. I never had the joy of meeting Ursula K. Le Guin, but their works taught me so much about the craft of fiction and the language, the poetry of fiction, and the higher purpose of fiction. Like parents, they showed me how to exist in the world that is writing, that is storytelling. I don't write like Ray. I don't write like Ursula K. Le Guin. That's not the point. But I tell you what, whatever I make, I'm always thinking somewhere in the back of my mind, would this make them proud? Would they find value in the attempt? You know? I mentioned Natalie Goldberg, whose Writing Down the Bones will be one of those books I always own. If you have not read Writing Down the Bones, you absolutely should. I think of Gail Scher, whose book, One Continuous Mistake, was particularly moving to me. Now, the thing that Gail Scher and Natalie Goldberg have in common is that they are practicing Zen Buddhists. Natalie Goldberg is a Jewish woman by birth. I'm not sure if Gail Scher is or not, but they have this perspective on the creative life, on the creative writing life, that is filtered through this Zen Buddhism experience. And I find it to be so instructive. I mentioned earlier in the show how reading the first chapters of Long Quiet Highway by Natalie Goldberg helped me to step back from the shit show that has been the last month and take a breath and feel grounded and centered and change my perspective for this very episode from what may have been a bit whiny to one of, well, just like last episode, one of gratitude. That is a difficult place for me to stay. But reading Natalie Goldberg gets me there. Reading Gail Scher gets me there. And reading Anne Lamott, especially her remarkable book on writing, her memoir on writing, Bird by Bird. That's another one. These three women have been the most effective teachers for me when it comes to remembering how to live a creative life. And I really should, show up for their classes, metaphorically speaking, much more often, because they are right there for me. I think these memoirists who, through their memoirs, are also helping teach about writing and crafting a writing life, I think it's a pretty direct line from them to this very show. I mean, what is it that I do here? I talk about myself and hope that in talking about myself, you and I can both learn something, benefit somehow, and carry on and progress in our art. And I owe Natalie and Gail and Anne for that impulse. I owe all my teachers, really, because as I discovered when I was a trainer for Borders, books, and music, I love teaching. I love having the opportunity to shape minds, even if it's something as apparently trivial as training people to be booksellers. Now, see, here's the thing. I never thought of that as trivial. I thought of that as a tremendous privilege, and bookselling itself as a responsibility that was pregnant with potential. Because when you are helping someone buy a book, you are, well, you just don't know where it's going to lead. You could be talking to the next Pulitzer Prize winner. You could be talking to the next president. You could be talking to someone whose work one day may reach many, many lives. And they may not have gone down that path, save for the book that you took off the shelf and put in their hands. Bookselling and writing are, they're all the same. You know, when we write, we are basically allowing strangers from the future into our minds. We're showing strangers how another person thinks, and we are inviting them to share those thoughts in their own mind and to transform our thoughts by virtue of the interaction with their thoughts. It's a conversation, right? It's a community. Lo and behold, there's that word. You knew an episode couldn't go too far without me mentioning it. We are all of us teaching, whether we write fiction or nonfiction, or teach fiction, or just teach. We are all of us teaching. We all of us have the potential to change, to shape the way other people think and feel. And hopefully, what we're doing, whether we teach first or second grade elementary school or high school journalism or transmit our teachings through the words in a printed book, we are all of us hopefully helping each other be better humans. So here's to the teachers. Please share with me, share their stories, keep their influence and their memory and their mission alive by sharing with me and the rest of the Sonototem audience stories about the teachers that helped shape you and helped make you a writer, a creator, an artist. Write me at matt@mattselznick.com or send me a brief voice message to that same email address, or simply write a comment in the comments for this episode, episode 53. At mattselznick.com. Okay, that's it. As always, I would like to thank my patrons, Ted Leonhardt and J.C. Hutchins. If you would like to become a patron and help support Sonototem and help offset the costs associated with maintaining and producing this show, including the literal hours every week that go into making it, then you can visit mattselznick.com/b-a-patron, or you can visit patreon.com/mattselznick and pledge anything from $3 a month up to $20 a month. There are perks and benefits that go with all the pledge levels that you can find out about at either of those links. And I thank you for that variety of support. Another way you can support the show is by rating and reviewing Sonototem wherever you get your podcasts. Just take a moment to rate the show 4, 5 stars, whatever you think is appropriate. If you have a little bit more time, consider writing a review of Sonototem in your own words. Tell the rest of the world what you like about this show and why they should subscribe and listen. Anywhere you get your podcasts. And speaking of that, be sure you're subscribed to Sonototem. Just hit the subscribe button in the podcast app of your preference. When you're subscribed for free to Sonototem, you will be sure to get every episode as soon as it's released. These days, it's every Monday. And you'll never miss an episode. And of course, the more people who subscribe, the more people who might potentially subscribe, because the more people who subscribe, the more noticeable the show is in the various directories. Finally, just for folks who have listened to the show all the way through to the end, I have special discounts and offers on my creative services, the services that I provide to authors, podcasters, and other creators as part of my day job. I have discounts on some of those services that should appeal especially to you, dear listener. And so I tell you, dear listener, how to find those discounts. Simply go to mattselznick.com/listener-love, and you can see what the current offerings are there. That link is just for you as a listener to Sonatotum. I don't talk about it or reveal these discounts anywhere else in any other way. It's just for you. So visit mattselznick.com/listener-love and see if something there works for you. I would love to work with you and help you bring your creative endeavors to fruition, to market, and to help you find your own creative community. All right, gang. There it is, another episode of Sonatotum. My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. Take care.